All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Fundamentally Sound Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Reeks from Barstool Sports. Tonight, we're recording this here on Monday. We recorded about 8 o'clock. I am joined by Brian Snow of 24/7 Sports, who's one of the guys that wrote the story about really questioning the timeline of ESPN's report on the DeAndre Ayton, Sean Miller, $100,000 phone call. So we get into that. As well as address the entire FBI investigation. Brian is very, very knowledgeable from the recruiting standpoint about what goes on there, and we kind of talk about that world and what you'll hear and things along those lines. From then, we get into what's going on across the country, kind of a little bit of everything, talking about who we think are going to be title contenders, who we think the public will pick for title contenders, what teams are good. We talk about Xavier. We talk about Purdue. We talk a little bit about Kansas. We talk a little bit about Carolina. And then we poke fun of our buddy Rob Doster, who has a real curse. So if you don't like a team, make sure you tweet at Doster and let him know to rank them number one, because they will lose right after that. It's a good show. Like I said, it's pretty in-depth. We talk a lot about it. As we recorded, though, Virginia Tech beat Duke in Blacksburg, and that is a win that should keep Virginia Tech safely in the tournament. That loss that they had on Saturday to Louisville made it a little nervous because they ended with Duke and then at Miami. They need to win one of those to make me feel really, really comfortable about them in the tournament. I think they're there now. I think you'll see them as like a 7 seed, maybe an 8 seed as of today. So they're on that, you know, kind of comfortably in line as opposed to the bubble when you get down to the, you know, the 10 seed and things like that. So that's a game to watch. That was kind of Duke was due for a letdown. They've been on a winning streak and on the road against a game that Virginia Tech had to have. I'm not surprised that it went that way. I'm not reading too much into it from the Duke standpoint. They didn't end the game obviously clearly well, as they just didn't make a shot for the last couple minutes. I'm not reading too much into it. I still think Duke's one of the, you know, 5 best teams in the country. Especially with the move to the 2-3 and Grayson Allen to the lead guard spot. So again, that's just kind of how that is. As always, though, I'm going to ask for your help. If you enjoy listening to this, I thank you very much. As we get ready to head into March, please rate, review, and subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play. We're on Audio Boom if you need to listen on your desktop there. But that helps with all the back-end stuff. And I can't thank you guys enough for doing it already. But again, I'll ask. Again, please rate, review, subscribe the podcast, and follow the show at Fundamentally SD. And here is the interview with Brian Snow of 24/7. All right, and now I welcome on Brian Snow of 24/7 Sports. Brian, what's going on, my man?
Oh, nothing major, just scandals and stories and, you know, the standard stuff we're talking about this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, nothing really happening for you, considering you guys over there 24/7 just dropped about an hour ago, recording here at 8 o'clock on Monday night, the story of essentially the timeline not matching up for the report of the alleged Sean Miller $100,000 phone call and everything else. So I'll let you run with it because you guys did the reporting. What the hell is going on out there?
Yeah, you know, when the first story came out, it just seemed off.
Yep.
The first question is, why was Sean Miller discussing a deal about DeAndre Ayton with Christian Dawkins when Christian Dawkins wouldn't say he had control over DeAndre Ayton?
Right, like that was the biggest thing that everyone that kind of knows like the recruiting world and how that operates, it was, well, Dawkins isn't Ayton's guy.
Yeah. And not like you can be involved and not be the guy. He's not even involved.
Right.
So that was odd. And then, you know, the more you start digging into it, it's like, wait a minute, did they just say this conversation happened in, I think initially they said June or July of 2017 or something like that.
Yeah. It was June 19th.
Yeah, because initially they said something, and I was like, well, that's after he was already on campus.
Which makes and even then, less sense.
And then they said spring of 2016, and I'm like, wait a minute, this makes even less sense. You mean to tell me Sean Miller's discussing a six-figure deal with DeAndre Ayton with Christian Dawkins 4 months before the kid's even going to commit? You would never do that.
No.
And then they just said 2016.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how many corrections can you get? So we did a little bit more digging, and we found out that – now, I'm not a lawyer. Let me make that very clear. But basically, if you have been recorded in a wiretap and it wasn't your phone that has been tapped, you are notified by the government. You get a notification saying between the dates of blank and blank, when person to whatever phone number, your conversation was recorded.
So Sean Miller obviously wasn't under investigation by the FBI, so that's why he would have gotten that notification?
Yeah, he has, and it's not just him. It's a lot of people have
right,
them.
Right.
But and in this all, circumstance. And after talking to sources, and Sean has turned over his information to the University of Arizona, which is one of the reasons they've reacted the way they have to this, there were no recorded phone conversations, no notifications of a recorded phone conversation before like June 19th of 2017. So how could a conversation have been recorded on wiretap saying what was said in 2016?
Right. And Ayton's already on campus by June 19th, 2017, correct?
He has enrolled. Enrolled. He has moved in. And I believe his first class was like the 20th or 21st or something. But he was already on campus, moved in, and enrolled.
Which, why are you paying $100,000 at that point?
Yeah, I mean, like the ESPN report says, like $100,000 conversation to secure the signature, I think is the exact terminology they used. Well, that's already been done.
Right. When would a date make sense for this if this happened? And or, you know, let's just use a general, to even taking away from this. When would a date make sense for a transaction to go down for a player?
You know, let's say he committed November 3rd. Or September 3rd, I think, is the date he committed.
Right.
Then, like, August 31st would make sense.
Yeah, okay. So late
August, because at that point, that's when you're going to – if you're going to buy a player, okay, you're not going to throw your hat in the ring too early.
Yeah.
Because then all you're doing is setting the market price.
Right.
And letting someone else jump over top of you.
Especially if you're someone like Arizona, who is a known program and everything like that.
Yeah, like – because then let's just say hypothetically, you know, it was Arizona, like, bidding – then whoever's controlling Ayton, which ESPN claims was Dawkins, which is not correct, Dawkins would go to, let's say, another school recruiting him, Kansas, and be like, well, Arizona's at 100. Can you get 125 for us?
Yeah, and then Kentucky 150, and then to Duke 175, and down on the road.
So you wouldn't do that until the end.
Where this is the final price type deal?
Yeah, like – We're coming close to a decision, you know, like, you guys let me know what you can do.
That makes sense.
And also, let's make it clear, like, I'm not saying DeAndre Ayton was or wasn't a money deal. I honestly don't know. I do know this. The price of a top five player, potentially a transitional player in basketball, is not $100,000.
Yeah.
The price of poker is way more expensive than that.
Right. Especially when you're, like you said, a guy like Ayton who's turning out to be a generational type talent. Where he's putting up numbers that mimic Tim Duncan. That's pretty damn good, as far as I remember from my my basketball watching days.
he seems decent.
I mean, he might be a consensus All American, and that would still be like a slap in the face.
Yeah. So I mean, like the number didn't make sense. The person he was talking to didn't make sense. And like, here's the thing: Arizona got the kid. So clearly, they knew they weren't going to be talking to the – they knew who mattered in the recruitment.
Right.
And it wasn't Christian Dawkins. And let me make this clear. I've known Christian Dawkins probably since he was 16 years old. I went to a camp he put on, like, in Michigan. One of the kids that was there that I saw for the first time was DeJuan Anderson, who signed at Michigan State and then, like, transferred to Iona or something like that. Like, that's how long I've known Christian Dawkins. Like, he can be full of it quite clearly. Even he wouldn't have the balls to say, like, yeah, I've got Aiden, when everybody knows he doesn't.
Right, so Dawkins, for people listening, because I know I've gotten this question quite a bit over the last, what, 3-4 days, is who is Christian Dawkins? He is a, what, 20, is he 25 now, or is he 24?
Whatever. Yeah, mid-20s, let's just go.
Mid-20, from Michigan, and he was a runner, essentially, for Andy Miller's agency, ASM.
Yeah.
Those are the,
you know, he's from, let's hear, Saginaw, Michigan.
Saginaw, okay.
His dad was, his dad, Lou Dawkins, who's now a college coach, I can't remember where he's at, I think Cleveland State or something, you know, was a very successful high school coach at Saginaw High School. Draymond Green played there. So, you know, people have known Christian forever. He ran an AAU program that Josh Jackson played for. Kid who's at Louisville, at least, or was at Louisville, big kid, I can't remember his name. Kyle Kuzma played for them for a little bit. Like, Christian's had, you know, Dorian's Pride was the name of the team, because his brother Dorian Dawkins died of a heart attack actually at Michigan State at like a team camp when he was a freshman in high school, I believe. So, like, you know, like, people have known Christian Dawkins for a long time. They've known Lou Dawkins for a long time. It's not like he's a stranger. I mean, I still have him in my phone as Christian Vaughn, because he's Lou Dawkins' stepson. He went from Christian Vaughn to Christian Vaughn Dawkins to just Christian Dawkins.
Right.
So it's like he's been around for a while. And recently he started working with – well, I don't know how recently, but several years ago he started working for Andy Miller as a runner. And, you know, the rest is history.
So now – and the other thing I think people are wondering or curious about is, how can Aiton – play in the game on Saturday, but Saturday, and Sean Miller not coach that game?
We, you know, obviously I don't have a direct answer to that question. Because I never discussed that with the Arizona administration. But certainly with Aiton, there's no evidence of him having any wrongdoing.
The important thing is that there is no, for Aiton, like, he's eligible because they can't prove that he took any money. Like, that's the simple answer, correct?
Yeah, and in defense of Mark Schlabaugh, who I still can't figure out quite what he was doing on this initial report, I would want to make sure I have the date that I know immediately.
Yeah.
But in defense of Mark Schlabaugh, he never said that DeAndre Ayton got paid. He simply said there was a discussion about a $100,000 payment to secure his commitment. That might seem like semantics to some people. It's a significant difference.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's the difference between a vacated season or not right off the bat.
Yeah. So there's no evidence he got paid. In fact, the FBI and the NCAA have both investigated both before and since the initial charges and found no evidence he got paid. So what are you holding him out for?
That makes no sense.
Yeah. In regards to Sean Miller, it's interesting because Arizona's clearly taking his side. They haven't put him on administrative leave.
They haven't suspended him.
They haven't reprimanded him. They haven't done anything. They have the documents.
Right.
Clearly, they believe Sean Miller.
Yeah, the statements have been very much like, no, he's our guy.
Yeah. So why did he not coach? The only thing I can think, if it was just an optics thing,
okay,
it would be too much to have him coaching a day after this came out. That's my guess. So I genuinely don't know what the thought process was.
I've gone back and forth, and it's obviously – we're all guessing with this. Do you think he coaches Thursday or what, they play Saturday? Yeah, Thursday, Saturday.
I'd say I mean, I hate to be the cop out guy, but I'm like, I'd say it's 50-50.
Right. Because he's been back home too, which I think might help.
Yeah, that was the other thing. Like, it was a road game at Oregon. It's just going to be a complete cluster if he's on the sidelines. It's a little bit different at the McHale Center.
Right, right. Even other road games in the Pac-12, maybe you can still do it. Oregon's obviously one of the better.
UCLA, you could do it, because what are they going to do? Like, well, they'd have to look up from their phones.
It'd also be 80% Arizona fans there.
Yeah.
I mean, you might be able to do it like at UCLA. You might be able to do it at like Oregon State or Washington
USC,
State.
Washington State.
Yeah. I would say Washington, Oregon, the mountain schools, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, Larry Krasaviak might fight him if he actually coached that game. I actually, you know what? I want that to happen. I want, like, I wish, like, I hope Jean Miller's first game back is against Utah.
So, yeah, I mean, that would be interesting because both of them are crazy.
Yeah, or UCLA just because of the history from last year with Alford with the timeouts.
Yeah, but Alford's not like that. Like, he's not confrontational.
No, but I just hope there's, like, the pettiness timeout by one of them again. Like, that's all I want. I love when coaches do that.
Yeah, but Alford's really wasn't a pettiness timeout. It was just kind of like he just was like, I got to call timeout. I got to make sure we don't screw up. And Sean's looking at it like, you're up four with 0.3 seconds left, you moron. What are you doing? Whereas Sean's was straight pettiness. Yeah, and Sean, let the record show, I'm here for pettiness.
I'm pretty sure Sean looked directly at Alford when he called the timeout, too.
No question. Like, and I'm here for all the petty. I love the petty.
It's the best.
I'm from Cincinnati, people. I've got Mick Cronin and Chris Mack. I'm all about petty.
I mean, I was at – so last week I went to both the Nova at Xavier and the Cincinnati at Wichita – or the Wichita at Cincinnati games. I mean, no ties between them still. And every fan base, like, just walking around the arena or the bars beforehand, and you're still just hearing Mick Cronin or Chris Mack or Xavier or J.P. McCura or Cincinnati. And it's great. Like, that whole – this city is based on pettiness.
I'm not joking with you, Riggs. I got, like – I was not covering Xavier at the time, but during the shootout brawl, the aftermath on both sides was so ridiculous. I don't consider myself a book writer. I literally have 50 pages on a Word document on my computer just describing what everyone was like. It'll never see the light of day, but I just had to – it was so frustrating. I had to type it out. It was amazing.
You know what? That day would be a good, like, short 30 for 30. How they did, like, the June 21st, 1994, whatever it was with – that day was in college basketball, the fight, the Watford shot against Kentucky. Yeah. And then there was another, I forget what, there was another like middle of the day or night game that was crazy too. But it was one of those days where it's like, that's one of the days that needs to be like written down.
It was a great college basketball. Well, I don't know about great, but it was an eventful college basketball day.
Yeah. And it was a Saturday, which makes it even better.
Yeah.
And it was like a week before Christmas, too, wasn't it? Or like 2 weeks before. It was right around Christmas time.
I think it was around like December 8th, 9th, 10th.
So I'm pretty sure like football was done. It was like that. Was it maybe the Heisman Day?
That's very. You know what? It was the Heisman Day. That was the third thing. It was the Heisman Trophy, Watford shot, and the Xavier UC fight.
Yeah. So there wasn't a lot of football going on that day. So back to this whole investigation. To me, the Yahoo report that came out didn't make a lot. Like, that was a whole bunch of nothing with a lot of noise, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was kind of alerted to what was in the document about a day before, and I didn't see it. And quite honestly, I didn't really care to see it. And I just asked a few questions. And then when you actually did see it, I was like, man, this is even less than I thought, and it wasn't much. Now, what? There's newsworthy stuff in there that isn't necessarily notable, I think I would say.
Yeah.
Like, it's newsworthy that, like, the federal government has documents that lay this out.
Right.
But it's not noteworthy because they have no corroboration of it, and it really doesn't mean much.
Yeah, there's no receipts.
Yeah.
Like, me and you could write up an expense report and say, yeah, we did dinner at Jeff Ruby's, but that doesn't mean anything.
By the way, I was sitting next to Jeff Ruby at the Xavier Villanova game.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
I was wondering if that was him. I was sitting next to him at the Cincinnati game.
Yeah, he's got a little bit more money than I do.
Yeah, same here.
But yeah, I mean, like, anybody can submit an expense report. Like, that doesn't mean it's true.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to sit here, like, you know, issue a full disclosure here. Like, you know, sometimes I've said I spent $20 at, like, TGI Fridays, and it was actually, like, $19.94.
Right. Or, yeah, you round up.
Yeah, I mean, like,
you go with 35 instead of 33 or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I mean, like, just because it's on an expense report doesn't mean it's necessarily 100% factual. Now, do I believe a lot of what's on there is factual? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, do I believe everything on there is factual? No.
I think that's the thing, is there's definitely more that's on there that's real than not real, but it's, okay, what is real versus what's not real?
But, like, when you start saying, like, you gave Markel Fultz an $800 cash advance for shoes.
Yeah, that.
I'm going to have a hard time buying that one.
Yeah, especially when he's Markel Fultz at Washington.
Yeah, in the middle of an Under Armour Jordan brand bidding war for his contract.
Right. Yeah, he's not short of shoes.
Or, yeah. One call to Adidas, he had all the Yeezys he wanted.
Right, right. And if he wanted Jordans, all he had to do was call Nike, and he would have got Jordans. Like, it's...
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think he needed to go to Andy Miller's agency for a loan for shoes.
Yeah, and just, especially $800.
It just doesn't seem logical.
Right. But what... So everyone then was sitting there going, okay, how you know, I think we kind of answered it too, but everyone going, how are these guys playing, and what's the future going to be? Was it weird that Malik Pope and Eric Davis were held out?
Well, Malik Pope, let's be honest, San Diego State doesn't have much to play for right now.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's kind of easier for them to make that decision. Eric Davis, my guess is the kid basically admitted he did it. You know, he had knowledge of it.
That
would
be
my guess.
Thing, right? Yeah. Because Texas, you know, like, has a lot to play for right now.
Yeah. Texas is playing for everything. So my guess is, like, they kind of interviewed him and the kid probably didn't get proper advice. And or I shouldn't say proper advice. Didn't give the advice that most kids would be given in that scenario. And he said, yeah, it might have happened. Whereas most, if you just deny, there's no way they can say otherwise.
Right. Like, no, I
and
never,
then, of course,
the
majority of the people listed as getting money are no longer in college basketball.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of the funny thing is, or the not the funny thing, but there were some funny names on there, like DJ Newbill waking up and being like, "Wait a minute, I'm on this report."
Yeah, like, okay, and I don't think fans understand, like, the NCAA can't just take this as gospel. It, like, it's literally against their bylaws. Yeah, they have to do their own investigation.
Then that's the one thing that I was happy to hear Emmert say on that Saturday CBS spot that he did, where he said, like, listen, we can only work with people in higher education. Like, we can't have, you know, we don't have sub, you know, we don't have subpoenas, we don't have wiretaps, we can't sit there and force these guys to talk, we can't necessarily use this. And it's like, that's the first logical thing I've heard in a while.
Yeah, so what you have is, like, there's guys on there, what you said, DJ Nuba, like, if the NCAA calls DJ Newbill and asks him to cooperate, he's either going to start laughing and hang up the phone or just hang up the phone.
Right, right.
And at that point, unless Christian Dawkins is corroborating, which I have a hard time believing that would ever happen, all they have is numbers on a page.
Yeah, with no receipts.
Like, though, at worst, teams are going to vacate some wins. Spoiler, they don't care.
Nope.
And that's at worst.
What was there, 8-9 guys on there? You mentioned, like, how do they – can NCAA even use this, or do they have to wait for the whole investigation to be done? Because there's – like, but I mean, most people on that list, everyone's going to be gone in a year or 2 years tops, right?
Like, my hunch is they will not act on this until everything's done. Just because and people will be like, oh, NCAA, they're so stupid, blah, 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 blah. They got burned in the Miami deal. They want to be so far away from that that it's, you know, they don't want it, any appearance of them cooperating, using whatever you want to call it, you know, federal agents to do their work for them.
Right.
So my guess is they have to wait until it's done. Now, I don't know that to be 100% true, but even if they do try to use it, Christian Dawkins sure isn't corroborating while he's facing federal charges. So if anyone says, no, that didn't happen, what are they going to do?
Would there be anyone that would cooperate? I guess, would it be one of the assistant coaches, like, if they feel burned down the road, that would have to cooperate here? Or Dawkins, like you said? Those are the only options, right?
Yeah, and even, like, the assistant coaches mentioned, like, let's be honest, like, so your listeners know, like, I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio, but I live in Indianapolis. There is no kid in this business I've gotten to know better, him and his family, than Gary Harris. Yeah. Legitimately still go over to – his dad is a friend of mine. We have beers every now and again. We hang out. I was in Denver. Gary got me tickets for a Nuggets game. Like, we're close. The fact that Dwayne Stevens, like, mentioned, like, hey, we'll help you get Gary Harris. Dwayne Stevens knew – that they had no control over who Gary Harris was going to sign with as an agent? You just say crap that a guy wants to hear.
Right.
That's not illegal. It's not immoral. It's not against any rule. Like, the notion that, like, Chuck Martin saying, yep, I'll help you get OG Anunoby to sign. OG's brother played in the NFL. He was going to pick the agent.
Yeah.
And Chuck knew that. I mean, like, got like people are like, oh, they said it. It's got to be true. No, it's recruiting. A key part of recruiting is telling people what they want to hear. Some may classify that as lying. I prefer just to say tell them what they want to hear. Because if you're not telling them what they want to hear, you're not going to get them.
What – I mean, you're obviously well into the recruiting world. What goes on, I guess, because I think everyone kind of knows stuff goes on. What are some of these things that we should expect to hear out of these reports that are going, okay, that's believable, or no, that just doesn't happen? Like, obviously the dates are important things to look at. When it comes to, like, what's being said, is it just kind of everyone being like, yeah, well, just you, I could see that absolutely happening?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you want to tell me that Christian Dawkins was given $1,000 to a player's parents here or $500 there, heck yeah, that happens.
Right.
If you want to tell me that they bought someone a plane ticket home for spring break or fall break or whatever break where they're not going to be practicing, heck yeah, that happens. Like, and guess what? There's not a dang thing a coach can do about it.
Yeah.
And then,
go ahead.
I've been doing this for like 13 years. Maybe I should know this. I don't know how you pay a kid like $300,000 and it like go completely untraced. I have no earthly idea how that works. Do you get a foreign bank account? I have no idea.
Yeah, that's,
but I that mean, does happen.
That's a good question. I never thought about that, about how it goes untraced. Like, I just assume, like, here's your suitcase of cash. Now do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, I mean, like, do you just get a suitcase of cash and, like, put it under your bed and, like, pay for everything in cash for 2 years in a row? I don't know.
Maybe. You just wait till your first big payday, then put it all in at once.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that happens. And then the other thing is people are like, well, if they get the bank records of the players, first of all, they can't get the bank records of the former players. Like, and they see that they put in $800 after these alleged payments, I can come up with about 1,000 reasons why I would deposit $800 into my bank account.
Isn't that what they get to from their scholarship? Like, isn't that?
Yeah, I mean, you could come up with any numerous number of reasons.
Yeah.
I mowed the lawn for 2 days in a row around my neighborhood.
Right. I sold four pairs of shoes or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, like, you could come up with anything.
Yeah. $800 is nice to have, but it's not like a life-changing amount of money where if you deposit it, it's going to draw notice.
Yeah. Like, my grandma, you know, she gave me some money to take a girl on a date next month, and it was the only time I could see her. So, bam, you know, it went in there. Like, how the heck do you know?
Right. Oh, it was my birthday money.
Yeah.
Like, it's very easy to do. Yeah, it's just weird, man. Like, it's weird that it came out now, too. Like, the timing of all these reports coming in out this time, and is that just weird coincidence, or am I thinking too much conspiracy theory here?
No, I actually don't think you are at all. I think what you have is the Feds had about a month in a row of really bad, nothing but bad news for their case. Whether it was the rogue agent who screwed up half their evidence.
That's or really flown under the radar, huh?
Yeah. Or the unauthorized wiretaps, which screwed up half their wiretaps. And, you know, there was a couple other things.
Yeah, the whole Augustine case just getting dropped.
Yeah, like, that's bad news. Well, if you're trying to convince people to settle, nothing but bad news for your case isn't a good way to do it.
Yeah, that's how you lose a bargaining.
Yeah, and I have one of my really good friends, coincidentally, who I met up with this weekend in New York. Literally, what she does for a living is fights the federal government.
Okay.
In cases. And she told me, like, the federal government's conviction rate is phenomenal. Because usually when they go after you, they have you, and no one wants to fight the feds because it's expensive and usually they've got you.
Right.
But she said what it is the feds have great lawyers. They have the best lawyers in the world when it comes to writing briefs and understanding the law and what – but they're not trial attorneys. They're not good at, you know, opening statements, closing statements, questioning a witness, whatever it may be. So when they go to trial, they don't win all that often. Or they win often, but not at a percentage that is high, relatively speaking. So you have all these coaches and shoe execs trying to go to trial and showing absolutely no interest in taking a plea deal, which is what the feds want. So what do? Let's throw something against the wall that's going to, at a time where everyone's paying attention to college basketball, that's going to cause a major uproar.
Yeah. Yeah. And now you're in this situation. But is it, I'm thinking more just the fact that everything's starting to leak, you know, heading into conference tournament week and right before the biggest cash cow, the NCAA.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's twofold. It's that, where it gets the most attention, and it stems the tide of all the bad news they were getting.
That's true. That's true. Because now everyone's talking about it.
Yeah.
Sun up to sundown, no matter what channel you're on.
And I don't think Forty and Thamel did a bad job of their reporting. They reported what is fact, which is this is a ledger on Andy Miller's computer, a spreadsheet, or what have you.
Yeah,
this
they actually
is what's
had
there.
The spreadsheet.
Yeah, like that's a fact. That is what it has. But you notice the stuff they reported beforehand, it includes all that and then like 40 different things that just weren't there. Like half the schools are going to be facing NCAA term vacating wins this year. There are only 5 active players.
The other thing, that's like today I saw somebody had a tweet or was on a show that said, I expect the over-under to be 20 coaches losing their job due to this investigation.
Like, I'll take the under.
Of power conferences. I was like, can I please have a line on this?
Yeah, I take the under on 2.5.
Because I will go foster a recruit to get that money to bet on under 20.
Yeah, no question.
Because if Sean Miller still has a job and not even has a job, if he's not even on admin leave as of what we thought was this, you know, groundbreaking and here's the explosion report, guess what? It ain't gonna be 20. Like you said,
no.
it's gonna be 3.
Tops.
Right, somewhere in that range. Like and it's gonna be ones where, let's face it, it's gonna either take a big time accusation that's proven to be correct, or it's going to be at schools where they kind of want to get rid of their coach anyways. They don't really care.
Yeah. Like everyone's point since the beginning of this has happened, and I'm in no way saying Kansas is dirty and I'm in no way saying Kansas is clean. I'm simply saying since everything went down, everyone's been pointing to Kansas. Were they anywhere on anything that's been released?
Outside of, what, Josh Jackson's mom getting the $2,000?
Yeah, which has nothing to do with that.
Which is not tied – right, that's like the only tie to Kansas that's been one of these things.
Like the name Bill Self – you know, trust me, if Bill Self's name was in there, it would have been printed.
Yeah, it would have been probably bolded at some point.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. There was – I guess what, in the very beginning, they – like Self said like, yeah, there something was taken from the office or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, but like there doesn't seem – everyone keeps saying, you know, Kansas is one step away from being nuclear bombed, and we just aren't hearing anything on it. And if we're not hearing on them, you know, what makes people think that the whole free world's coming to an end?
Yeah, because it's like them – I mean, that's the thing. Everyone keeps waiting for the names here: Kansas, Kentucky, and Duke. There aren't any ties to the schools yet. Unless you really want to say Wendell Carter and Kevin Knox.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Right, and even that, you're talking, what, $40 and – or was it $70 and $106 or something like that?
Yeah, throw them in jail and throw away the key.
Right, right.
Can't have that. That's ruining the purity of the game.
Right, which, let's be honest, that's the biggest bullshit in the world, right? This purity standpoint.
Like, yeah, that went away when they stopped keeping – when they started keeping score.
Right, like – it's been around since the 30s.
Yeah. Well, when did they start keeping score? Because that's when people started trying to win.
Right. What is the – because now everyone's trying to do, okay, how do you fix college basketball? What are the things that you would like to see fixed? I use fixed loosely here. What are the things you'd like to see changed?
I would like to see the players allowed to have representation.
I think that's the biggest one that everyone agrees on, right?
Yeah, and to me it's simple. I went to Ohio State. I lived with my freshman year, Ryan Kessler, who won a gold medal, or I think it was a gold medal or silver medal with Team USA in hockey. He plays, I think he's with the Ducks now. Nate Gannon, Rod Pelley, all three of them played in the NHL. They all basically had agents. Like, it didn't cause a problem.
Right, they're allowed to. Like,
yeah,
he's allowed to have agents.
It, like, you know, they, I think at the time, I'm kind of old now, they weren't technically allowed to have agents. They could have an unofficial advisor, family advisor,
sure.
Which, like, give me a break. But it was like, you know, it was smart because that advisor could allow them to – could directly communicate with teams and organizations and figure out when's best to leave and when's not and where you're going to be drafted and where not. Like, it just makes sense.
Yeah, especially when – I think it was Parrish that had it, where it was like, if you're the number one pick within 2 years after you leave school, you have $15 million to your name.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. And let's face it, most kids that are the number one pick are what, 19, 20, or like 20 years old? 21?
Exactly.
They're like, you're dumb as shit at that age.
I'm still dumb and I'm 34.
Right. Like, we're both in our 30s. I don't trust myself with that money.
Yeah.
You think a 20-year-old is gonna be making the right decisions?
So it's just I think name and likeness and being able to profit off that will eventually come. I think we're still several years down the road. What I will say is I think flat out paying players, I'm in favor of it because I just think the money's there to do it.
But
I do think it's a little bit more complex than like Jay Billis likes to make it seem. Because then you get into employer-employee things.
Well, you have Title IX to begin with, too.
Yeah. Title IX, it screws up eligibility standards because once you're an employee, you can't really have eligibility standards like that.
Right.
How
do you determine who gets what percentage of the pot and everything?
Yeah, like there's. I think that's a little bit more complex than people make it out to be. But still.
I do agree with that. I do think, though, it's a little simpler to do, like you said, if Tony Steakhouse wants to put, you know, Kevin Knox on a banner in Lexington, on a billboard in Lexington, you know, pay him $5,000, go ahead. Because the thing that pisses me off is when you say that and people are like, well, that's just going to benefit the blue blood schools and the power schools.
Well it's already like that.
I was going to say, what mid-majors are competing year in and year out right now?
Yeah. Like, again, I'm from Cincinnati. Like, Miami, Ohio's not competing with Xavier and Cincinnati for prospects.
Right. Like, they're not even really competing with Dayton.
Yeah, like, Ohio University is not a threat to Ohio State.
Yeah, and it's just, like, that's going to be the way, that's the way it's always been and the way it always will be.
And the thing I always point out is, like, again, how many, in whatever city you live in, how many athletes actually have a real endorsement deal? Like, how many do you see endorsing a product?
Yeah, it's
not many.
A couple.
Yeah. And by the way, it's still going to go to the professional sports guys first and foremost. Sure, a couple college kids at a couple schools might get some real money, but most of it's going to be peanuts where it ain't going to make a difference.
Right. So, like you said, it'll be at the schools that are not around, that aren't around pro teams. Like Lexington, like Lawrence, where you're still like a little bit tucked away from where the biggest or where the closest pro team is.
Yeah, but even in Lawrence, I mean, all those companies, all those major companies, in essence, are going to be Kansas City companies.
Right, and they'll take.
Yeah, they're going to put Patrick Mahomes on there before Devontae Green or Devontae Graham. Excuse me. I'm sorry, people. They just are.
So you might get $2,500 from a campus bar or something like that.
Yeah.
Or a campus restaurant, whatever it is, which I'm fine. Like, I think that's the way to do it. And there's obviously extremes. Like someone said, well, what if, you know, the hypothetical is what if, you know, you go get your own sponsorships and Baker Mayfield gets sponsored by the NRA. Like, that's obviously like the way out there hypothetical. And it's like, well, that's a personal decision to make whether you want that or not.
Yeah. Like he has to come up is $20,000 from the NRA worth having the NRA attached to my name as I'm going to try to be marketable in my future to make a lot of money?
Right, because
if he decides that he is, I don't care. You know, but like that's a decision he has to make. Is this in my best interest?
So do you think we see – because all the court cases are set up for what, later this year and early – about this time next year?
Yeah.
So do you think – when do you think we hear anything from the NCAA? We're still probably, what, 2-3 years down the road?
At least a year, I would say.
And then even factor in all their research?
Yeah, I mean, then I think we start hearing from them in terms of a final finding. I just wonder if they're going to be – if they're going to – unless something severely changes here, if they're going to throw their hands up and be like, we know no one's cooperating. We know there's nothing we can do.
Yeah, I think that's the thing I've been like kind of saying to people is just remember like – because you know, people somehow think like I'm getting information from the FBI and I'm like, I don't have documents. And guess what? The NCAA isn't going to get documents either.
Yeah. I don't see why the FBI would ever share anything with the NCAA, and especially if they're going to, you know, especially if they're going to look bad in the process.
Yeah, right. What's your guess with you think Arizona obviously is the big one. You think Miller coaches again this year at some point, postseason included?
That'd be my guess.
Yeah. That makes sense. Let's switch it to what's going on the court because, well, it's kind of fun going on the court right now, too. Who the hell is good in college basketball?
There's teams that are good, but everyone loses.
Right. I feel like they go in losing spurts, too, right? Like, it's not like you lose one game and bounce back. It's like you lose two or three in a row.
Yeah, I mean, you just start playing bad. You get in a little funk. You start it. College basketball is such a make or miss thing, and that's basketball in general. But you're making threes one day, you're not the next.
Yeah, I mean, look at Villanova. They're 10-0 when they are shooting 35% from three or better in Big East play, and 2-4 when they're not.
Like, yeah, we saw them have, honest to God, that their first half against Xavier is the best in person I've ever seen a team play.
Oh, they were out of their mind.
And then then 2 days before, they couldn't throw it in the ocean against Providence.
Yeah, and then against Creighton, they had 5 wide-open looks to seal the game and went 0-5.
Yeah, that's just the nature of what we're dealing with in college basketball. Then with Virginia, it's, are the other team's shots going in?
Yeah, that's true. Because you can, if you're hitting shots, you're going to beat them in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
I'm jealous you did the Why Your Team Sucks podcast with Doster because I love hating on teams. Because my favorite saying is like, yeah, I hate your team and love your rival because I've been accused of hating. I was keeping track at one point. I think I got accused of hating every Power 5 school.
I've actually given a tweet, and I don't even remember which tweet it was and which teams it was, but rivals of the two schools simultaneously – accuse me of being a homer for the other school based on the same tweet.
That's the best.
And I'm like, listen, if you want to accuse me of being a homer, that's fine, but make up your mind.
I've been accused of being a homer for schools I have zero ties to.
Oh yeah. I mean, but like, yeah, I was simultaneously a homer for two rivals who were complaining about it from the other side. And I'm like, fellas, you're going to have to get your story straight because I'm not that smart. I went to public school.
My favorite was I got accused of hating both Providence and Rhode Island at the same time, but being a Big East homer. One of those schools are in the Big East.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to do both.
Seems difficult. Very, very difficult.
So,
but hold on. Let's address that real quick. Big East basketball I'll put the Big 12 in there too. Far and away the best to watch this year.
Oh, hands down. You know what? The ACC is close as long as you don't count, like, Pittsburgh.
Yeah. But even, Virginia, as good as they are, it's a hard watch.
They're better this year. Like, I actually enjoy watching them play. No, I wouldn't say enjoy. I like watching them the most this year than any year under Tony Bennett.
Like, you start watching, the Big East especially, those teams are just going up and down.
Yeah.
It's like, YOLO, let's go. We're not calling 1,000 sets. We're just getting it and going, letting our bucket getters get buckets.
That and they have talent, right? Like you have two first team All Americans, I think, in the Big East, in Blewett and Brunson. Big 12, you have Graham and Young, and I mean every team is a point guard.
Again, I went to Ohio State. I grew up in Cincinnati. I live in Indianapolis now. I'm a Big Ten guy.
It's the worst.
These coaches, quit calling 32 sets a possession.
It's the worst.
Let your players play just a little bit. Thank you very much.
It's hard to watch Big Ten basketball. Like you said, I don't understand why people like games where they preach, well, I like to see defense. And it's like, well, you can see defense with better offense.
Yeah. Then the other thing in the Big Ten, which is really weird, if you watch Ted Valentine officiate an ACC game versus a Big Ten game, he does it completely differently.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not just saying Ted. It's basically every official. You know, they do a Big East game versus a Big Ten game. It's totally – they let them play tackle basketball in the Big Ten. And then in the Big East or the ACC or the Big 12, they actually call fouls all year long, so guys stop defending by tackling, and it makes it so much better.
Right. Like, what cracks me up are the people that scream, like, you know, pace of play and scoring and college basketball is boring, and then they don't want to watch the Big East or Big 12.
Yeah.
They're like, no, let me watch Nebraska versus Minnesota.
Yeah. Let me watch Northwestern.
Oh. Those games are like, they score like 11 points a half.
Like, they played like 58 possession games. I'm like, how's that even possible?
It's not fun. Like, that's how you lose, too. Like, you, how many times do we, like, we talk about with Virginia, like, that was kind of like Wisconsin's knock until the
Kaminsky. Until they had pros.
Right, until the Kaminsky and Decker crew was, well, you were going to lose in, like, to a sixth seed every year when you play 40 possessions a game.
Yeah. And I, so yeah, we got off on a sidebar, but definitely, like, there's some really good college basketball this year. You just have to look for it.
So I put out this tweet today, and I want to see your thoughts before I give my answers. Who do you think are going to be the five favorites from a, you know, general consensus standpoint to win the NCAA tournament next week when conference tournaments are ending?
Just so we're clear, my five favorites are the public's.
Let's do both. What are your five favorites, and what do you think the public's five favorites will be?
All right. I think the public will be Duke, Michigan State, Virginia, Villanova, and Kansas.
Those were my exact five for the my public picks. With Michigan State being the
favorite. My personal picks, Michigan State, Duke, Villanova, Xavier. Who would I have at five? I don't trust Kansas at all. Not Purdue. If Arizona was somewhat normal, I'd say them.
That's a team that I kept wanting to like buy.
You know, I might say North Carolina. See, just because they've been there.
Yeah, I get that, but I'm like, I don't buy into that theory a whole lot.
Yeah, I'm searching for who I really, because I will not go with Virginia. I can assure you of that. Until they get there, I can't bet on them.
Yeah, like I just go back. Yeah, I mean it's like a double-edged sword where I'm like, well, they were just like a terrible 10-minute stretch away from being in the Final Four 2 years ago.
Yeah,
2 years ago when they lost to a terrible Syracuse team.
And then, like, you know, like Kansas, can you really win with one front court player for four games in a row in March?
I mean, they're going to try their damnest, too. they look like they might be able to. If Devontae Graham does this, they might be able to.
You know, and then, so that'd be my kind of my group. I think the public will be all in. If I had to guess a betting favorite, it's going to be either Michigan State or Duke.
Yeah, I think that's clear. Like, I think whoever wins their conference tournament will be the betting favorite.
And as we say that, like, everyone's talking about how Michigan State's passing the look test. Are they really?
Yeah, they still turn over the ball a ton. They've won.
They win every game by three. Now, not that that's a bad thing, but like, they're beating bad teams by three.
Right. They're not blowing everybody out by 20.
Yeah.
They passed the look test just because they look good for a half. Like, they looked good the first half against Wisconsin yesterday, and then looked not great the second half.
I mean, I think they're good, but
how good are they?
Yeah, and I might pick them to win the tournament. Let's be clear.
Yeah, I think they're. I mean, I think they're one of the four best teams in the country.
But I'm not as enthralled when I watch them as like everyone else is saying. Oh my god! And it's like, really? Did you see they went through an 8-minute stretch where they're completely colorblind at the guard position?
The only thing I can think that maybe will be a fifth team in there for the public is if Kentucky wins the SEC tournament.
I still think that the public has so little faith.
I think you hear everybody, because people start doing the 2013, 2014, 2013,
yeah.
Like don't forget. And then if they win the SEC tournament, I think you see people going, well, they've done it before, so why not one more?
Yeah.
But I
and we know Doster will pick Wichita State, so he'll have that.
Well, unless they get Charleston in round one.
Yeah, I mean,
like that could be
the moment you face Charleston, you have no chance to win a basketball game.
Yeah, actually, it can't because they already played this year. But ideally, like maybe Charleston will upset a team and they'll catch them in like the 4-12 game. Because I would text Doster all week about it.
Doster would be like, it would be like the greatest moment of his life.
I would like, I'd have to be like, Doster, we're putting all the money on Wichita State, right? Because like, this will define them their national championship here. I will say, like, watching Wichita State in person was one of the first times I felt last week in Cincinnati where I felt kind of like blown away by them more than I have with other teams. Like, I never realized how big Sham it is in person.
Yeah, that was not my finest eval coming out of high school.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to tell, like, how people miss on him, but at the same time, it's like, that guy's damn good.
Yeah, there's no rationalization in my mind. Sometimes we take L's.
Yeah, I mean, when you eval, what, 500 players?
Yeah, I'm going to take an L.
Right.
Landry, I got it wrong, son, sorry.
What did you say about him?
I thought he was like a good like mid-major plus player. I was like, he'll be a good player in Wichita State. You know, like solid, good athlete, can make shots, doesn't blow me away physically or with speed. Yeah, good call, Snow.
I mean, it's still right. Like, he doesn't blow me away with his, like...
Yeah.
He's just good. Like, he doesn't blow me away. He blows me away with his size and then, like, his, like, ability. Like, the Cincinnati game, kind of made me buy into Wichita State even more is they have a little bit of a swagger to them. Like,
which I love.
Right, right. And that's what I'm kind of getting at. It's like Shamit came out of the game, hit a couple threes, and he was like had a little shimmy to his step getting back on defense, and like they had a little bit of celebration. I was like, all right, they turned into motherfuckers on the road, and that's something that I buy into.
Yeah, and I love that sort of stuff. Speaking of evals, the one that – and I love watching this kid play, Carson Edwards.
Oh.
And sometimes it's so funny because you look back at it like – we saw Carson Edwards was a backcourt with De'Aaron Fox. Robert Williams was on the AAU team. Jared Vanderbilt. Like, everyone saw Carson Edwards. And Carson led the team in scoring.
Okay. Not surprising.
And I, you know, you're looking at him, and, you know, we're all looking at him. It's like, all right, he's a 5'11 two guard. He has absolutely no feel, but he gets buckets.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's a ceiling on that.
Right.
You know what? So I'm like, he'll be okay. You know what the ceiling on that is? All-American.
Yeah, how much fun is it going to be, like, him versus Cassius Winston next year at the point guard spot?
Yeah. It's amazing. It's like, well, I had the eval correct. I got him exactly what he is. I just didn't know how good he'd be doing.
Right. Like, I got the eval on where the ceiling is wrong.
I knew what he'd do well and what he wouldn't, but man.
Although I will say, good. I am curious to see him next year at Purdue with them losing so many guys.
Yeah. Purdue will be different.
Right. Like, you know, it's going to be what? Like they have the bench is fairly young, but just how good are those guys and can they step in and actually do something? Because, you know, teams will sit there and go, all right, we got to take away Carson.
Yeah, because he's going to be the focus because you're going to have Ryan Klein out there. I still think the fact that Ryan Klein has now attempted 2 free throws in like 400 minutes might be my favorite stat of the season.
It's almost like him and Max Hooper need to like be on the same team just to see who takes a step inside the 3-point line first.
Yeah, like by accident, don't you get fouled shooting one once when a guy's running out at you?
Or don't you just like get the ball in your hands for a 1-on-1?
Yeah, like.
Like you get held running off a screen?
I mean, like by accident, you should end up at the foul line once every other game.
Yeah, yeah. At least
if you're playing significant minutes. He's been there twice.
That's so bad. That's hilarious. I mean, it's hilarious.
It's amazing. So, David, you'll have Klein, Harms, the kid with redshirting, Aaron Wheeler.
Harms might be my favorite player in college basketball because he, like, I'll never forget at Battle for Atlantis against Tennessee. He got called for a foul and he just started stomping around, and it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. Like, I love watching him because he's unintentionally hilarious.
And, like, that's the most, like, anti-Matt Painter personality ever. Right, Matt, who's, right. Like, really calm and cold and collected, he's got to be like, what is wrong with this dude?
Yeah, so they'll have Harms, Klein, what's-his-face, Esteen, or however you pronounce his last name. I can't think of it.
Eifert.
Esther. Eifert's still there, right? He'll be there?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about him just because it brings up bad Tyler Eifert memories.
Right, right.
So no disrespect to you, Grady.
So they'll have a bunch of dudes. It's just we have no idea what they are.
Yeah.
They'll be interesting next year. What's your take on Duke? Like, what do you think was here's my better question on Duke. What do you think was the bigger adjustment? Letting Grayson be the lead guard guy, or moving to the 2-3 permanently?
Moving to the 2-3. And I say that because it lets them rest on defense.
Okay.
If you're only going to play five dudes or six dudes, like, let's be honest, you're not going to rest on offense. Every coach says, rest on offense, not defense. That's not going to happen.
Well, again, that was in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Yeah. So that ain't going to happen. And if you're only playing five or six dudes, like, you also can't have them foul. I mean, that was part of it is, like, Trayvon Duval couldn't try on defense because if he fouled, what was going to happen?
Right. Because I remember that's what everyone said with, like, the championship team. Like, Jahlil Okafor had to, like, not protect the rim because they didn't have another guy to bring in, especially at the post spot.
So now that you're in a 2-3, you get to sit back a little bit. I mean, it's the same thing Xavier did last year in the NCAA tournament. They had six eligible help. Well, they had more, but three of them could only play center. So it was like, we have to play zone.
And it ended up working. Big guys. What? I guess you answered it earlier, but that's a team. Well, we're both homers of Xavier. At least we get called homers of Xavier all the time.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah. What? I think they're a national title contender. I've been high on them heading into the year. Are they a legit national title contender with how they play defense?
Yes, because which would you rather have, a dude who gets you buckets or a dude that can stop someone else from theoretically getting buckets?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take Trayvon Blewett over almost anyone else in the country.
Yeah, I mean, that's what – at the end of the day, one, when you watch that team play, you have to really watch them because they go through stretches where they just don't care. Yeah. When the game gets close, they actually do guard.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Like, they are the worst defense in the country when they're up by 10 or more.
Right, they just gamble. Like, McCure just gambles.
Yeah, and the rest of them just don't care.
Right.
They're like, all right, we're going to win because we'll score enough. So, like – it hasn't been a problem when the game's close of getting stops. They've done that quite a bit. And offensively, they are dang near elite. I mean, they're not quite Villanova, but they're damn close.
Yeah, especially the fact that, like, to me it's always been if Marshall can hit, like, one corner three a game, two corner threes a game, and Gooden can hit two, you know, wing-to-wing threes, that just completely changes the offense.
Yeah, especially since Gooden's turned into Steve Kerr here recently.
Yeah, I mean, he's, like, he went from shooting roughly 1% to now I think he's shooting 140%.
Yeah, it's fairly impressive. So, yeah, I mean, am I going to pick them to win the national title? No, I'm not. But I think they are a legitimate national title contender.
Right. How many true national title contenders do you think there are?
I think a lot just because there's no dominant team.
Okay.
Like, I think Xavier can beat Virginia. I think Virginia can beat Xavier. I think Virginia can beat North Carolina, but I think North Carolina can beat Villanova, who can beat, you know, this team, who can beat Kansas. So I think there's a lot of teams that I can really view winning the national title, maybe 8 or 9.
Yeah, okay. That's not – I think when I did my list, I had like 6 or 7, so kind of in the same frame.
Like,
I think the one thing like I kind of like getting into it with people is – there's a difference between Final Four contender and, like, national title contender.
Yeah, big difference. Those two wins are huge. That's a huge difference. Like, South Carolina got to the Final Four last year, and they were never a national title contender.
Right. So I want to ask you, because I've tried explaining it, and maybe people just need to hear from another voice. What is the difference for the Final Four contender versus the national title contender?
In essence, with a good draw, you can get to the Final Four and beat good teams.
Yeah.
If you want to win a national title, you're going to at least have to beat one great team and usually two great teams.
Yeah.
There's a big difference between beating a good team and beating a great team. And that's what you're going to get in the Final Four. And you've got to have, in essence, you got to have dudes.
Right. Because my point is that when you get to the Final Four, you're playing against pros.
Yeah.
Like, there might be one team that you know, is the Cinderella, the VCUs, the George Masons. But there's a reason they don't win.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, if the team doesn't have pros, like pros, when we say pros, we mean like legit NBA rotation guys. If a team doesn't have that, they've got the absolute stud 4-year college dudes, the Ryan Archie Diaconos the Jalen Brunsons, Kennedy Meekses of the world, just right. Stud 4-year college guys.
But even Archie Diacono is a stud 4-year college player and getting, like, he's playing NBA minutes.
Yeah, I mean,
which is that to me, like, because I talked about it with him last week, was, and I've been saying this, is, you know, you need pros on your team to win a title. Like, everyone kind of talked about Villanova being like this, you know, little upstart team and group of guys, and it's like, well, Archie Diacono is getting NBA minutes. Hart was a first round pick. Mikal Bridges is going to be a lottery pick. Brunson's going to get drafted. You know, Ochefu's played NBA minutes. It's like, it's not a bad group.
My favorite is when people reference the, like, Butler Duke game, the Gordon Hayward shot game, and people are like, oh, that little engine that could Butler. Yeah. I'm like, you realize they had far and away the two best pros on the court?
Yeah, Shelvin Mack.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's not even close.
Yeah, because who was Duke's best pro from that group?
Was Singler on that team?
Yeah, Singler.
So it's Singler. So it's like they had Singler, and then they have, you know, Nolan Smith and John Shire who are coaching.
Right. Quinn Cook has been, you know, in and out of the league.
Yeah, more out than in.
Right, but, okay, he's still, you know, I'll still give him an NBA pro.
Yeah, but, like, Butler had the two best, and, oh, by the way, Matt Howard, who's probably making more, who's made more money in his basketball career than, like, Shire, Nolan Smith, and Quinn Cook have.
Yeah, yeah. And then you have what? You had Mac and
Hayward,
yeah. Wow. And I didn't even think about it. I completely forgot, like, Mac's on the team just because it gets overlooked with everyone else from a college standpoint.
Yeah. So everyone wants to credit Brad Stevens. I've told Brad to his face, I go, man, people are crediting you for being boy genius. So they should be wondering why you didn't win the damn game.
Right, right. Like, everyone says you're a great coach. You shouldn't have been out-coached.
Yeah, I mean, like, clearly you got out-coached. You screwed it up with the two best players. Yeah. And Duke loses at the buzzer.
Yeah, and you have Brian Zubek. I mean,
Brian freaking Zubek.
Come on, Stevens. You can't take an all-star and beat Brian Zubek?
Yeah, I mean, what's wrong with you?
You know what? I might go on record and say Brad Stevens is overrated now.
Overrated.
He, like, get him, you know what? Gotta get him back to the college level. Actually, you know what? I don't think college teams want him. Maybe that's why he's in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, clearly no one wants him. I mean, he lost with the two best players on the court.
I mean, that's a fact. That's a factual statement.
And by the way, can we talk about how the curse of Doster is real?
I want to, but I'm also like, I feel like I have a curse too.
Like, he just put Duke number one in his power poll and they just lost.
Oh, did they? I'm on tape. I'm on streaming because my freaking – and I missed the final shot because it froze.
Yeah.
Who scored? Oh, it was
– Chris Clark on a tip-in. Then Grayson got clearly fouled that they didn't call. How you don't call that is beyond my comprehension. And Bagley tipped it in late. But the curse of Doster is real.
It really is. I felt like I was always cursed because I would take – I do like a – I did like a contender series. And I did – who did I take? I did Florida, then they started losing. I did Purdue, then they dropped two games. I did Texas Tech, and Keenan Evans got hurt. I did West Virginia, and then they blew like three leads in a row. And it was just like, oh, I'm done writing. Or just like, what teams don't I like, and I'll just write about them.
Purdue to me is the most interesting team in the country because you either really like them or you really think they have a lot of flaws. Where do you stand on Purdue?
So Purdue fans yelled at me a lot this year because I didn't have them in my preseason rankings. I think I picked them to finish like fifth or sixth in the Big Ten. And I was just like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't trust Isaac Haas, essentially, is what it came down to. And I was wrong about that because he's been really good this year. But I think they're good. Like, I definitely think they're in that top 10 tier. But I think they're severely flawed at the same time. Like, they don't have pros. Like, I don't know how many pros they have.
Like, my biggest concern is who beats you off the dribble to get a bucket.
That's the other thing. And, like, not only that, but, like, they're a terrible rebounding team.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, they got Isaac Haas. He's a great rebounder. No, he's not.
No, like, that's how they lose games.
Yeah.
They'll never have their best offensive lineup on the floor with their best defensive lineup. Like, they're going to give something up, whether it's Harms or Haas on the floor.
So, to me, they're the most interesting team because some people think, oh, man, it's really, really hard to beat them. And I look at it like, and I think Purdue's really good, but I'm like, man, if you just take away their threes and make Haas beat you with twos?
Yep. I think
because they're going to get less shots at the basket because they don't cause turnovers and they don't get offensive rebounds.
I think they're the most matchup-dependent team in the NCAA tournament from one of the top seed standpoints.
I agree with you.
Because if you have a big guy that can play Haas one-on-one, you don't even have to think about doubling.
Yeah, like, let's be homers for the city of Cincinnati. Like, how would they deal with UC with Kyle Washington or Xavier with Karim Cantor?
Right, and then on the flip side, I think Xavier can score with them. Like, Xavier can shoot with them. I think they match up okay against Cincinnati just because I don't think Cincinnati, like, can take advantage of Purdue defensively.
But still, that mobile offense. Big guy who can stretch you a little bit? Whew. Yeah,
that's how you hurt him. And like, and then you just bring Haas up in high pick and rolls.
Yeah.
Like, so there's a recipe there.
Yeah, I mean, you have to execute it well and be good to do it, but there is a recipe.
Right. And I mean, we've seen them lose the teams, and then we've seen them, like, similar, like we said with Michigan State, like, they won games by 2-3 points against not good teams. Like, all year. Like, I don't know how good they are.
We don't know how good anybody is, so it's all good.
I think we'll end on that. Brian, thanks for coming on, man.
No problem.
Where can everyone find you?
On Twitter, @bsnow247, and then 247sports.com.